Okay, open the meeting?
Yes, please. Okay, 202, if I may take roll call again. Here we are, March 23rd, and we're still having public participation and staff above the social distancing requirements participating via Zoom or on the telephone. So if I may go through and do roll call real quick. President Woolburn?
Here.
Vice President Hickman?
Present.
Director Starr?
Here.
Director Moreland?
Here.
Director Edwards?
Here.
Council Cooper?
Here.
Information System Manager Martinez?
Here.
Environmental Health and Safety Manager Perrin?
Here.
Finance Manager Wong?
Here.
Power Division Manager Leon?
Here.
Myself, General Manager Mosley, and then Compliance and Regulatory Manager McKillop?
Here.
Thank you. Who do we have participating remotely?
For employees, we have John Shipman and Dan Shipman.
Okay.
For guests, we have Charles Sharp, Debbie Rasmussen, one unknown, Gretchen Floor, and Ms. Vernet.
And similar to last month, at the conclusion of the board meeting, would you mind emailing me all the names so I have the names and spelling conventions correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. All right. I have to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Raise hand. Salute. Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All righty, let's go ahead and go into approval of minutes. Questions or concerns on the minutes? Got a motion to accept the minutes?
The minutes look in good order. I'd like to make a motion to approve.
Okay. Got a motion to approve the minutes? A second?
A second.
Got a second. Any comments from the audience or from public? Any comments or questions here?
Nothing in the email as of 204.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Five ayes. All right. Steve, finance report for us?
Well, let's look at warrants and checks first.
Kind of move this meeting along, aren't
we? Really. Afternoon, board members. Appreciate you being here. Certainly is a nice springtime day. Appreciate you giving up your afternoon to be with us today. A number of items to point out on our check listing this afternoon, page 1. Check number 59605 was to Cresco Equipment Rentals. And then a couple lines below that, a payment to Knife River. Those were expenses incurred with regards to the community line, Foothill Boulevard project. And we've got a couple more of those that will be showing up on our listing today. On the next page, there's a couple of projects with the account code designated 2020-0200 in the account code column. Those are all expenses related to our raw water line. That project taking place in the Bangor area. In the middle, we've got page 2, a payment to McMaster Car Supply Company for oil skimmer with regards to the Fordstown Powerhouse, and that project is, I don't know, Dan, where are we standing on that?
So the oil skimmer is an item for Fordstown Powerhouse work with the sump pump system, and so with these are the costs to install, to purchase some parts and install this device.
Okay. And that is still in progress, or
thinking that the most is in the process of being installed during the outage, and the materials have all been purchased, and we expect on no other expenses.
Oh, very good. Thank you. On page three, I've got right in the bottom two thirds there. Item check number 59674, Ridley Country Ford, was a payment for a for F-350 new truck. That was for our utility worker, a replacement vehicle. On the next page, we have a second truck that was purchased relatively soon thereafter, right near the top, 59693. And that was an F-150 for our Comtech position. Both of those trucks have come in the last month, and they were both replacement vehicles. Back on page three, I'll highlight the payment to Sibylline Reed. That's 59680, and that was the final payment for the road repairs. I think we've mentioned this project before, but this included the final retention payments for that project. Page four of five, and the last page of the listings there. Let's go from the bottom up. Check number 59715 was to the Oral Health Professional Group. That was for COVID testing, COVID-19 testing. You saw this last month, and then it's in the list on the list this month. And then as I looked at my notes, we'll be seeing some more payments again next month as well.
Steve, how many tests was that for?
Yeah, Jamie.
So that's roughly about 34 employees through the contract tracing that required, and POs have been issued, Rick, for a current total amount of $3,593.
Okay.
So the reason you're seeing, so what you saw would be two, what I would describe as group POs, so multiple invoices that came in on the employee's behalf that we were able to get paid out. On their behalf, on those POs. What you're now seeing are basically the remaining invoices that I would consider trickling in, if you will, so more of a one-off for each invoice, so that's why you see the amounts vary so much.
So they charge us about $100 a test?
Roughly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Good call. And just above that line, you see our quarterly payment that we made to Northeva as well. There were a couple of software support payments made in February, which will cover us through the first part of 2022. Art will help us on these. Let's start with check number 59703. It's the E&M machinery, but it's really for historian software support. And Art, maybe?
Yeah, so it's the software's used at the miners' rent treatment plant for control. And this is an annual license and maintenance. So because we have to get a 24-hour access, so the maintenance is a little higher than normal.
Thank you for that, Art. And then a couple checks below that, 59705. I know it as ESRI is the how we usually talk about it. But that's also for a subscription payment, and even $10,000 for the year. Art, do you want to elaborate?
Correct. That is our mapping, our GIS software, that server licenses, support, and our software that we use out in the field. So that is an annual license, and that is divided between more and our division.
And I don't think that's changed in quite a while.
No, it's been the same since we initiated it 12 years ago.
So that was a quick rundown of some of the more significant checks issued last month. Is there a Rafe?
On page 3 of 5, you look at check number 59. three with professional services, $27,858. And we think it's worth noting that $18,000 of that expense ties to one closed session item, Glaze versus South Federal Power Agency. And then farther down, check number 59680, Sidlon Reed, the Miners Ranch Road Canal Repairs. Do you want to speak to that at all, either Dan or Jamie? That's what to expect of that
$74,000.
Oh, we'll go ahead,
Dan, and then I'll pick up what
Fina said. Oh, sure. Sure, this is, again, this is the road repair at this location adjacent to Panel 300. And this was a contract with Sidlon Reed, and to rebuild the road after that that part was damaged. This is the final payment, the final retainage payment. Sorry, Jamie.
Yeah, no, you're good. So the fourth and final invoicing payment, plus to Dan's point, the retainage, that has since been turned back over to Cal OES and FEMA. And again, that was a result of the 2019 winter storm incident. And we will look to recoup at the ratio of 75% coming from the feds, 18.75 from the state, and then we as the local own 6.25% of the total project cost. So that is in the reimbursement process now. So
thank you. Those are my comments.
And as those continue to get closed out, Steve and I are working to be able to provide that and keep that as much in the real time as the closeouts continue to happen, so the board and public have both had an opportunity to make comment on those costs of both what the agency incurred and then obviously how that reimbursement process closes out due to account credits where Steve will pick up from the financial side of things.
Thank you.
So, Ray, can you say that again about check 59663?
Yeah, I said of that expense there that you see of $27,000 or so, $18,000 of that ties to one closed session item, which is Glaze versus South Southern Water and Power Agency.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. It just seemed like I needed to hear that again. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that would have been for work covered and performed in January, because these were a February payment.
Any other questions?
So, Steve, that $10,000 mapping fee we're paying every year, what fund does that come out of?
That's split, as Art was mentioning, that is split between JFOF and general fund. Even, if I recall, split, yeah. Both of them. The whole agency benefits, and so both funds are paid for that.
So now what about that expense cost going, though, back to some of North Yuba's share on the Joint Facilities Operating Fund? So is that 50-50 split correct, or it almost seems like more of that should be paid by the Joint Facilities Operating Fund, if not potentially all of it?
Well, clearly we do use... We do take advantage of it on the water side, water division side. So it would be a tough sell to charge the full amount.
To the joint facilities operating fund. Right. Mm-hmm. But again, it seems to me like 2/3 or 75% should almost be joint facilities operating fund with all the beneficiaries of that fee every year.
Well, we can always look at the allocation of time and actual uses of that those services. But generally speaking, a 50-50 split seems to make sense.
Okay.
But it is part of the JFOF expenses, and so by default it becomes a net sharing.
Copy that.
And then I should also comment, in your approval motion, I'm authorizing or requesting the authorization of a transfer $2.5 million, $2.5 million from the general fund to the Tri-County Bank accounts payable payroll fund. That's to pay our bills this month in March, which include a April 1st debt service payment of two payments, a total of just about $2 million. So that's the most of what that request is for.
All right. Any other questions for Steve? Have you got a motion for us?
I'll make a motion. I move approval of expenditures for the month of February 2021 in the amount of $1,276,312.81 and authorize the transfer of $2.5 million from the TCB general fund to the TCB accounts payable and payroll fund for the payment of regular operating expenses.
All right. First,
I'll second.
Any questions or comments out there from the audience?
None here.
Nothing in the email as of 2/17.
Thank you.
Art, what is the, looks like we have a chat. Is that related to this item at all?
No. Okay. No, I was instructing people on how to participate.
Okay. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We have five ayes. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to staff reports.
Thank you. Let me give you an update on a couple of items here. We've received an update on our other post-employment benefits liabilities. These are a calculation that's is reporting our obligations to existing employees after they retire for not pension benefits, but health and benefit services. Basically health insurance programs, and it's a big amount, but it is spread out over 20-30 years is the amount. It's just an update. It wasn't a full evaluation. The accounting requirements have that for every other year, and we're on the off year right now, but we appreciate that. That was provided for us at no charge as part of our contract that we went into last year. Got a second item. We could requesting or proposing a meeting, a workshop. There's been interest specifically from President Wilburn, but others as well, just interested in our cash and management, our investment practices, and strategies. There is a convenient video presentation that is available to us. Thought that would be good for us, and then take some time as well to review the actual cash and investments schedule that I provide each month, and then the following month maybe have adopt or modify our existing policy that we have in place. So I'm proposing a noontime workshop prior to our next board meeting. It would be ideally it would be a finance committee, but we'd make it open. Who knows what we'll have to do with regards to COVID, and then we'd want to be sure we're not violating any Brown Act provisions, so it wouldn't be discussion times, it'd be more educational, or certainly educational in process. But that's what I'm proposing. So if there's some comments on that.
That's a great idea, Steve. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, don't get too excited, but yeah.
You're going to put me to sleep on the day?
That's on my schedule too, Steve. You emailed me about that, so.
That'd be great if we could do that. I'm thinking no host lunch, so it would be feel free to bring a brown bag and said it would be a presentation, so we're just observing for the first 45 minutes or so. So that'd be fine. Good. We're working on a number of audit items, and I think that's proceeding smoothly, but it's a lot of work, and we'll be doing that remotely again this year. And then a reminder with regards to the Fair Political Practices Commission Form 700 is due on or before April 1st. In terms terms of actual numbers.
If I may, real quick, if any directors need assistance with their Form 700s, I'd be happy to meet with you on a one-on-one basis and help get those completed. So just reach out to me, please.
Thank you.
On page one, in terms of our financial report, this is the Great Falls Joint Facilities Operating Fund, that top line. Actually, let me do this. Go to the end of my report. It's page 11 and page 12, and there's the graph for our power generation. We have January and February actual numbers. We're receiving February's numbers and another, or February's dollars from PG&E in another 2 days or so. You can see February came in slightly less than average, which was also the same scenario that we had in January, but better than last year. March, Dan's preliminary numbers mid-month are not good. They are significantly below average, maybe just a little bit above where we were last year, maybe a little over that $500,000 range. So that is not a good start to our fiscal year. Okay. So if you turn back to the first page of the financial report, top line sale of electricity, our budget for 2021 was $15,225,000 in joint facilities. Those are the upper three powerhouses, or those are our three powerhouses, not including the slide, the other three powerhouses. That was based on an average, our 10-year average. We're probably not going to make that. We'll probably be closer to what we received in 2020, which you can see was almost 10.6. So we'll be $4 million down. Yeah. Banking on a water transfer sale, and that'll at least get us back up to what our average has been in terms of power generation and JFOF. So that's where we're at right now. We're keeping an eye on that, of course, and we'll be starting, we already have, and we'll continue to make adjustments on the expenditure side. Further down, on the right-hand column, actual receipts in the past month, $43,105. That's FEMA money that came in when we just talked a little bit about the road repair project on the Miners Ranch Canal. That was a check from FEMA and a check from Cal OES, their shares for just a portion of that project. Most of that money is actually received in 2020, but we picked up some of that. So that's what that revenue represents. Let me just comment top line under operating expenses. We have a significant number in our administration account. Please don't be too concerned about that just yet. It's still early in the fiscal year, and our process of accounting is to accumulate a lot of the, not a lot, but we will accumulate our health and benefit costs in the administration accounts. And then starting next month, that'll be divided up among the actual operating departments, and so that'll be spread out in future months. So for the first couple months, because we don't have much of a history in terms of actual experience with our time cards, still too early in the year, we just hold out of those monies in the administration account until there's at least some pattern, and we can spread those costs out at that time. So going on to page five, I'll just highlight the same kind of thing. A little bit further down under power revenue, account 41305 was our Slide Creek powerhouse power generation. That's a general fund revenue source. Our estimate, same process, was the average, our 10-year average was $1,625,000. We're not going to make that this year, and given our current tracking, we'll be closer to that 1.3 million that we saw in 2020. At least that's how I would estimate it at this early, at this point in the year, which of course puts us $300,000 less coming in on the general fund side. Same concern, we'll be looking at expenses on our general fund all the way up and down the line. On page 7, a highlight for you, under the capital outlay projects, 2020-61C through 2021-61M, those are all projects related to the Sly Creek Powerhouse. So we received the money in the general fund from the Sly Creek Powerhouse power generation, but we also have expenses related to that facility. And I'm nervous about these projects because eventually we have to do them for compliance purposes. And so I'm not sure how much flexibility we have with those projects, but we'll again keep you posted on that. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions for Steve?
Steve, I guess I'm still hung up on this distribution when the general fund and JFOP are sharing expenses on that. I see why you went, you know, general fund and JFOP half and half, but considering JFOP is mostly power generation and those numbers, income numbers, are significantly more than the general fund, I would say there's another way to split that, which may be more fair, and that's based on revenue. The higher revenue provider pays a larger percentage based on that revenue percentage. So it's just something I would like to see explored, and maybe we could talk about it at another meeting.
Fair enough, and we do. just as we do recognize when we can, we do the split the cost based on revenues when it does make sense, but we'll go and continue to make that analysis on these expenses as well as others.
Our general fund could use the help. Obviously.
No question.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you. Looks like Dan, you're up.
Well, good afternoon, directors.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for your time. So just to take a few minutes here and review our power division report for February. To start off with, in operations, we'll talk about some of the highlights there. We are still seeing this dry hydrology pattern, so our the Northern California region precipitation the year to date is at about 52% of average. Snowpack we're seeing is at 65%. So those numbers aren't really, really low, but they are, you know, lower than we would like. Moving forward then to the actual reservoirs themselves, we are bringing water into Sly Creek Reservoir through our tunnels. And currently our storage for our combined storage for our two main reservoirs, which are, you know, where we store most of our water, of course, we're at the report here, as of the point of the report, was 80,000 acre feet, and we're now at 83. So we've actually improved. I want to mention that we are still, based on our power purchase agreement contract, we are still below the rule curve, the minimum amount of 100,000 acre feet. So because of that, then our generators are not being run as much. They're being run minimally, which is unfortunate. And as you can see from the chart on the bottom of the first page, what this is telling us, those small bar graphs there for the three powerhouses there, we're actually running at last month ran at 14% of capacity, which is low, 14% of our capability. On to our next page, the top there, we see the top table there, third column, available for generation hours.
We see that Woodley Powerhouse was lower. It was going through a maintenance outage, annual outage. The other three powerhouses were available for all hours of the month. So that's really a great thing to see, is that the powerhouses are available. Everything's ready to go. We just need to run and need the water. The second column from the right, additional generation, not dispatch at full output. You can see how large those numbers are. We like those numbers to be smaller, because when they're large like this, it means, that, again, another indicator the powerhouses are not being run to their capability, or at all in some cases. The second table, we see the pricing, the ISO, the CalISO pricing. So monthly prices were $67 and $59 for February, which is excellent pricing. And compared to the average, which is about $37 to $38, or $36 to $38 a megawatt hour. As far as maintenance, Woodley Powerhouse is back online, fully operational. We are currently in an outage for Forbestown Powerhouse, and the outage is expected to complete here in a few days. And as I mentioned here, the work tasks include, we're doing an important project, which is repairing of the generator insulation and inside of the actual copper winding. We're also doing a mechanical alignment of the unit. The unit is comprised of many components, the turbine, the generator field, what's called a rotating exciter. And we had some vibration there that our crew are addressing. So we're also rebuilding a sump pump, doing various other testing. So it's all really beneficial, excellent work that our crew is doing. Kelly Ridge and Sly Powerhouses remain, of course, fully operational. Other maintenance, as I mentioned, each month, we do our usual inspections of penstocks, roadways, and so forth. Clean various screens for the canals and reservoirs. And our crew do rounds to all the outstations to visually check them and check them for operation and also just for condition. And of course, our ongoing vehicle maintenance and equipment maintenance in our main yard. So as I mentioned last month, we have these transmission line outages that are initiated by PG&E, and these three that are here. And these are significant. And when we have these outages, we will not run the powerhouses, especially since we don't have water to spill or water. You know, we preserve the water, we hold it back, we keep it until during the time these outages occur, because when these outages occur, the powerhouses, one or more powerhouses physically, are not connected to the line, so we can't sell power, and we don't flow water at that point. The challenge for operators, hydro operators, is to not spill water, but also to maintain our minimum fish flows, and also maintain the flow in Miners Ranch Canal for the Miners Ranch treatment plant. So we obviously have to pay attention and try to balance that out. So moving on to the rate compliance, a regulatory compliance topic. The first two items here are efforts that our compliance and regulatory manager, Kristen McKillop, is working on. I'll just touch on these, and afterward, Kristen, if you want to add or address anything on that, please feel free. 2020 water use reports. So Kristen and staff have been working on compiling data for the 2020 water use reports. This is due to the state here, the State Division of Water Rights, by next month. And there's also reports that are tied to the pre-1914 rights, and these are being worked on, we submitted as well. There is a 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, and again, Kristen and staff are working on, have basically participated in interactive webinars and just learning what the new requirements are for the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan based on DWR's requirements. And there's a deadline of July 1st for submitting this. And this is a plan that is submitted every 5 years. So at some point here, notifications have been sent out to the community partners that we need to notify of a board meeting where we'll ask you to review and adopt this urban water management plan. And that will be this will take place at the June 22nd board meeting. On to the last item here, under the regulatory compliance, CalISO data request. CalISO has the ability to approach generator owners like ourselves and ask us for electrical and mechanical parameters of the units, and they use this for their modeling of their overall electrical grid and so forth. So this is a significant effort that we're working on, and we have retained a consultant, Grisby, to assist us to prepare and then submit these data sets to the CalISO. Regarding some projects, our crew and myself of the power division, we're working on energy delivery transition projects here. And these projects include, one of them is a replacement of the CalISO meters and what's called the remote intelligent gateway. These are devices that are being configured by a contractor. And this equipment will be, at some point, will be installed at the various locations throughout our power project. So we have existing meters and this rig device, and actually are replacing these to update the equipment. We also have a SCADA replacement project that's taking place in here as we speak. And so the crew and I meet regularly to address our project schedules and deliverables. We have calls with the vendor. And at some point here, the vendor is engaged in doing the factory integration, their own internal engineering, and then this will be installed in the field later on this year, the SCADA replacement. As I mentioned earlier, at Fort Sound Powerhouse, we are doing a repair of the generator stator insulation. The insulation, it has degradations in the insulation, and this has caused electrical discharge to the air, basically what's called a discharge to the air, a partial discharge, and it has the effect of corroding nearby metals. And so we're just pleased to get this work done. And we have done pre-testing, and now most of the repairs are done, and our crew are also doing post-testing of the repaired areas, and we'll have a report documenting everything. Finally, I just want to mention here that our agency crew repaired the Miners Ranch Canal Road adjacent to Panel 86, and our crew used these bin walls with these large, like, I don't know, 12, 15 by 12 foot or so corrugated galvanized boxes that sit in the ground and form a really secure, robust repair. So with that, I have no other content. Actually, before I wrap up, just the next page, the precipitation chart. You can see here at the very last little blip there on the far right, that's the you can see all these various levels here, these various like little shelves here showing the maxima of water precipitation in the Slide Creek Strawberry Valley area. And we can see here that the 21 water year is not looking very high. It's unfortunately very low. And then the page which then shows the reservoir storage, the next sheet there, if you look at the red lines, in particular down below at Slide Creek, you'll see how much lower it is than the other lines. You know, we're about 20, depending on how you do the calculations, 15 to 25 or more thousand acre feet lower than we'd like to be at this point. So even though the precip, the snow storage and precip are up around 50s or 60s percent of normal, we just haven't received as much precip here. Now, that being said, we have some fairly good snow storage. With that, I have another content. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So again, back to the second page of your report.
Yes, sir.
Again, I appreciate these little charts here. This really gives me a lot of information in one concise look. So I guess what I'm confused about this month is why the dispatch at full output hours does not match the monthly prices. Usually when we have a doubling in prices, yeah, it's due to demand, and then we get some action on that. It appears we got nothing out of this.
Yeah, well, you're correct.
Paying care.
The demand, you know, the demand here, you know, was low, and the demand as far as PG&E running us was low. That's true, and the pricing having to spike up for other factors that were really external to this region. So if they just, I mean, even though we're price affects this region still, there was actually a period of some spiking that was going on. So with the pricing. I mean, the ideal scenario was a good high price and good volume, and what we saw this month, like exactly what you said, you know, Mr. Hickman, is we had a lot of volume. I mean, with no volume, but very low volume, and it had a very good price.
So we got nothing out of it, but yeah. With that kind of a price, I mean, that's literally double the average. Yeah. Who got all that action? Somebody got that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, are they deliberately not running us because of our...
the storage.
Well, and what about our interaction with PG at this time? I mean, are they not running us due to other factors?
Well, the main thing, if in terms of the PPA, the current power purchase agreement that's in place... is the minimum storage? There's minimum storage values for the two reservoirs throughout the year, and they range from 140,000 acre feet combined total to about 60,000. And currently in March, we are at 100,000 acre feet of combined storage. So when our storage goes below that, then based on the contract, they PG&E will not run us. And there's again, that's just the way the contract is written. So we're at 83 right now, 1,000 acre feet combined storage. The minimum is 100.
So we were below that. So
we
there
are
is
below.
A reason why they didn't run.
Yes.
A clear reason.
Yes.
Okay, that makes more sense. That's a shame for us.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of good months at 67 to fix some things around here.
All right, any other questions for Dan?
Dan, do you have any forecasts or even just a sense of where you think our high point total storage will be?
I do have some numbers in my office, and I have the dark arsenal storage number as well that I can review with you.
Okay.
Yes, I do have some forecast information that goes in before detail.
Okay.
Yes.
Dan, is there any big storm events scheduled in the future?
I'm afraid not for here.
So,
yeah, it's
time to plant the garden?
Yeah, it's
not blown away.
I look at the 2 week out and several month out, and it's there's a currently a dry pattern for the next couple of weeks that appears to be in place. So.
Wow, man, it looks bad.
Yeah.
77 by next Thursday.
Yeah.
No other questions? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Okay, directors, moving on to water division. We'll start with water treatment operations. So you can see that the minor trans treatment plant produced about 74 million gallons. That's about 105% of average over the last 5 years. You can take a look at Bangor there, about 175,000 gallons, which is, interestingly enough, Bangor's production has been down. It's only been about 63% of average. So we anticipate as the weather warms up, just like Director Hickman communicated, we will see that plant rapidly get up to about capacity out there based on the size of it. So expect to see a change in draw there. John Shipman and his team at the treatment plant performed annual clarifier maintenance. The operators did notice that there was algae growth on the clarifiers, so they've increased the pre-chlorination process to correct any potential issues, so that's just kind of a leading indicator to mitigate any potential future problems. And you can see the trended graph at this point. Again, to remind you, when you look at this graph, you know, we had a high peak production of 3.58 million gallons in one day and a low of 2.41. Remember, this is a 21 million gallon per day peak capacity plant with a comfortable operating range of 17 to 18 million gallons per day. So we, in the summer months, you know, that number average of 2.65, you know, can be 10.5 to 11 million, but we have a lot of room. We need to continue adding accounts and delivering more treated water, which leads me into distribution operations. You can see kind of the five areas we focused on since we last met in February. We continue to consistently add new services into the district, so that's good. But it takes, you know, thousands of those to really make a step function difference in demand, as you well know. Continue to focus on irrigation maintenance across the entire district in preparation for our April 15th opening of our irrigation season. Again, I'll speak to it on the following pages, where we're at with the Bangor Raw Water Pump Station. A lot of service repairs, and then the community line domestic pipeline. We spent 7 days on that project. I'll elaborate a little bit more on the following page.
If you're interested to see specifically where and what we did throughout the month, I have those listed by location. So in terms of new services, you can see where those were installed, Bangor treatment plant work, installed pipes, hydrants, etc. across there. If you have any questions. In terms of the Miners Ranch Road community line, we're about 500 feet from getting that pipe dug and installed and to the point of stop as in terms of scope of this project. I will tell you though that team has really struggled between, you know, rock, hitting rock and then the saturated ground with the on again off the grain rainfall has really created some challenges. You know, we need rain, but at the same time the ground has to dry out for a couple days in order to get back out there and you're not working in mud. So it's been a challenge, but I will tell you that we think that we can by the end of next week have that pipe in the ground and then be ready to install the fire hydrant and then start connecting some services to those accounts. So we're getting close, folks. In terms of the community investment program, Bangor, here's a couple pictures to show you where we're at with that. So the picture to the left is a concrete pad and you see some vertical structure sticking up. So that's our electrical. The employee underneath right there is actually setting up for the drain system. So this pad is where all the pumps, the filters, all the control valves, etc. will be installed. And then there will be a building infrastructure that encloses and locks all of this. I think all of you know that particular area is subject to theft. It wasn't too long ago we actually lost a generator at that location, and so we want to make sure that all this infrastructure is locked up and secure and out of sight from that standpoint. So that's what you see on the left. The right hand picture gives you an idea of the inside of the control chassis that's going to operate all this, the variable frequency drives, the programmable logic controllers, etc. So you've got your main power controllers down at the bottom, the lower green box, etc. Then up top will be all the rack mounts for the PLCs, etc. So this system will be a high-performing system, which also enables the opportunity based on interest and funding expansion off of that platform. So this is not limited in the ability to expand off the platform. So that's important to know. We plan to be pressurized and running here before the irrigation season. South Feather staff, myself, needs to coordinate, continue to meet with the investment partners out in that area. There's still some conversations around whether the community is going to operate on individual lines and meters, master meters, large line, etc. So we just need to true that up and get that work going. But really at this point, in terms of residents out there, the district is not stopping that portion of the work. We want to work with them to help lead them along the way to completion. So we'll be doing that in the upcoming evenings with the group. Questions or comments operationally on Water Division in terms of the projects or what we've been working on? Okay, quick update on PG&E Power Purchase Agreement, the force majeure. As you all know, we've been operating under a force majeure of the Power Purchase Agreement. And again, as a reminder, the dispute is on the upper three powerhouses, Woodleaf, Sly, and Forbestown. We're working to schedule mediation. That's likely to be performed in either April or May. And, you know, probably the biggest comment for all of you, because it's continued, and I just want to highlight that. At this point, PG&E has made no formal proposal for a future power purchase agreement. So we continue to vet out, and we will be presenting in front of you options and suggestions for a potential new buyer as a result of that. So unless things change dramatically in the next 4 to 8 weeks, we'll be presenting you a new power purchase opportunity. Back in the fall of 2019, there was some conversation and several of the utility districts got together and met at the LAFCO office to discuss a potential grant funding opportunity. So the county had line of sight to potential grant money and wanted our thoughts collectively as utility folks on what we might think was the best use of that money. We asked collectively, so it would be South Feather, Thermal Leader Water and Sewer, Sewage Commission, and LOAPUD. We said, how about a combined municipal service review? So all of us were in need of MSR updates. None of us really have ancillary funds to spend on that. And so we proposed that. A draft was worked up, and then it went pretty silent. Of course, COVID hit. Happy to report that fast forward to now, and there was a kickoff meeting on March 8th, and the grant funding was in place. And so consultant was identified to perform all the MSO work. We participated in meetings with that consultant. And then you can see the list of the six items here kind of on the sequence of events that will take place towards an updated municipal service review for South Feather as well as the other three participants. And we'll keep you updated as that progress moves along. Again, as a reminder, in terms of MSR, this is no hard cost to South Feather. You know, the work of Lathcone County is what's helping fund this. It's just our sunken cost time, you know, with resources available. That's my staff report. Do you have any questions for today?
Any questions? Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Looking good, Rick.
Get my mask on. I'll get that over there. Public comment.
Oh, let's go ahead and move into public comments. How are we looking, Art?
We have one. Ms. Hernan, who would like to address the board?
Go ahead.
One second.
Thank you for giving me a chance. I'm, as you know, a very unhappy irrigation customer of your business partner, North Cuba. I have a comment and question. The comment is thank you for attaching them in the act of piping Orly Creek without a permit. This is not something that we could do or have done. As you perhaps know, we have been delivered a full irrigation season only once in the last 6 years, and our confidence is super low about this year, knowing the rain and precipitation that you just discussed. My question is, as you hold North Yuba Water District accountable for their action, is there any chance, will there be a chance that your action is helpful for us, even over time? Are our interests aligned? Is your efforts to work with North, with your business partner, is that, will it provide some water for us in the future, or some predictability? It's a question that I have, many of my neighbors, we were just conducting a confidence survey of how all the irrigation customers feel about getting water delivery this year. And many of the neighbors were asking if you as a business partner are indirectly helping us. And my question is, if in any way, at any time you can, could you please address this publicly? Thank you.
Thank you.
Charles Sharp would also like to address.
Where is your property at?
We cannot respond to Jonathan.
Hello?
Go ahead, Charles.
Okay, good day, everybody. Charles Sharp, Oregon House. I see you have four closed session agenda items regarding the North Yuba Water District. It's time to bring up the sharp knives and start slicing and dicing this wayward water district. It has held water, hostage long enough. Let me know how I can help. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Charles. Any other comments?
Phone
email?
Nothing in the email as of 2:55.
Okay. Justin, do you want to go ahead and remind us about being able to comment or not comment on public participation?
Yeah, Ms. Fumier, I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name appropriately or not, but the board cannot respond in this venue. If the board receives a public comment that they would like to address more directly, in an expanded fashion, then the venue would be to add an agenda item to a future board meeting.
Thank you, Dustin. All right, so no additional public comments?
No.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to informational items. Jamie, is that you?
Yeah. All right, so This is really just a quick blurb to touch base on some of the wildfire mitigation efforts that had previously been discussed in the back half of 2020, early 2021, that can now be presented and overlaid with potential CAL FIRE grant opportunity. So a webinar was participated in on March 18th, so last Thursday, where we had an opportunity to better understand what that process is going to entail. And then what you have here is just really a quick website snippet of some of the varying types of activities and tasks that they would be looking to potentially fund under the grant opportunity. Wanted to highlight a couple as we really kind of overlay that with all of the other agenda work that had previously been discussed, that vegetation clearing in critical locations to reduce wildfire intensity and rate of speed. Arguably, with our territory, not easily a task that can be accomplished, but obviously priority suggests that there's some opportunity there. Creation and maintenance of fuel breaks in strategic locations as identified. Actually happy to report that we have a map and had previously worked with CAL FIRE in summer, started really a kickoff in summer 2019 off of some of the varying canal assets and varying irrigation ditches. So definitely see an opportunity to dust that map back off, spend a little more time with them, and potentially do some implementation there. As we go down the list, really wanted to highlight another one that I feel like was really some work that has already been put in, but just to follow suit with the opportunity for more. Modification of vegetation adjacent to roads to provide for safer ingress and egress of evacuating. Really, that Lake Wyandotte project really solidified what that activity would be about and the efforts between the shoreline up to that road there on Hurlton. And I'm sure you guys remember the photos and the month over month and the significant help of the Butte County inmate work crew that we had teamed up with there. Reduction of fuel loading around critical infrastructure really would suggest that that also overlays with some of the other CAL FIRE work that in that map that I had previously discussed. And then would even include the purchase of fuel modification equipment not to exceed 250 equipment. So would like to just explore and see if there's any opportunity there that maybe we could potentially increase the fleet or improve the fleet along the way through this grant. So again, staff will continue to support these types of efforts. And then also in a long shot or a stretch goal, we'll be overlaying this or continuing to overlay this with the Department of Insurance efforts and the ability for local residents to obtain basically free market insurance outside of the voluntary versus involuntary market. There is another Department of Insurance webinar scheduled for April 2nd around community level and property level fire reduction and how that overlays obviously with the ability to obtain insurance in a voluntary market. So risk modeling continues to be the name of the game, at least that's the route that it's headed. And that could also help set priorities as we continue to identify areas in our sphere of influence and general service areas that we serve. So more to come, but wanted to get that laid out and obviously give you guys an opportunity if there was something that really kind of rang your bell as you went through this list on one you would like us to really hone in on before we go too much further down the road.
So this money potentially could go straight to our agency?
That is correct, through these varying channels.
Okay, not necessarily in coordination with the county, or potentially in coordination with the county of Butte as well.
It could be. So if there was one particular topic that you felt like could be overlaid with, say, Butte County, then we would be directed to go and make that happen and, submit the grant. Under the assumption that it would be a commingled effort, if you will. Otherwise, we would plan to just pursue a grant through South Feather's channel on South Feather agency-owned property, assets, those types of things.
Now, if we go the straight South Feather route,
mm-hmm.
does this parlay into any private property field reductions within our district? How far does this go?
So it has the ability to serve on private property through the grant process. Obviously, we as the agency would need to go and, you know, get all the proper, you know, documentation from a legal liability standpoint, those types of things. I think we as staff view this as really staying on our agency-owned property, much like we had continued to elaborate on the wildfire water availability policy that had previously been discussed. So,
but potentially private property through the maintenance of ditches flowing through.
Of course,
Private properties. Okay, and where do you see this having the most potential? In a coordinated effort with the county or a direct home run back to our agency?
I think with some of, so the CAL FIRE map that had previously been sent back over that describes some of the laterals, if you will, of the Bangor and Palermo canals and ditch system, I think there's opportunity there that maybe a true up or an update or confirmation that those are still their priorities. They would basically be assigning that their CAL FIRE's opinion and priority, and then we go out and execute that work on our, again, agency-owned property.
Jamie, may I elaborate just for a moment?
Yeah.
I would say that from, you know, priority and getting attention, as South Feather, specific as South Feather, this agency demonstrating that where we have waterways, whether it's storage or conveyance, ditch systems, through fuel reduction efforts, if that increases access and availability to water during an emergency situation, moves us pretty high on that list under review and consideration, specific as an agency. So that's what I would suggest we focus on, right? It is that type of activity. How do you do fuel reduction that leads you to the availability to draw water, particularly in an emergency situation?
I like that conceptually, and I like not being slowed down by having to interact with the county on this project. I think it's pretty progressive for a water agency to be taking on this kind of a role, but I don't know that there's ever been this kind of free money or grant money out there for an agency to do this. So I like to see that we're being progressive and going after that. And again, I think that we could do the best job of that and keep it lean and mean and not get burdened down by other agencies with our specific mission.
And I can tell you that was our intent with coming to you guys today is, you know, while the county and LAFCO both forwarded over the invitation for this grant opportunity, so please give credit where it's due and keeping us in the loop, we see this submittal as a true South Feather to CAL FIRE direct, particularly based off of, you know, other, previous historical dialogue and some priority and other conversations that had already been had with the local CAL FIRE unit, where we think we can go out and make a difference. Whether it be water availability through a drafting channel like Wraith just talked about, or even being able to have those ditches and canal areas cleared, you know, 10 feet to both sides, and knowing that those guys have a viable option in terms of a decent fire break as well.
Do you see there being any opportunity to expand the canals to bring water into additional areas and have more access to water for, you know, people, but also for fire?
You want me to tackle that? Are you okay?
Sure.
I would say that our first, short answer is yes, but our first near-term focus would be to increase conveyance and then utilize that increased conveyance for, say, groundwater recharge, so saturation of open terrain before we got into the whole process of, you know, extending canals and ditches. But I think that's where we would start near-term, right? So green the ground, if that makes any sense, and then see where that takes us.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. You guys are really doing really well with the Butte County inmate crew. CDF has inmate work crews also. They need to step it up. Your state prisons are full of people that can do the same. And when you get in the ditches and clear out all that brush, the water flows way better. And then if it don't in the dry summer, all that brush gets dry and then it burns. And then you got a problem with homeless people starting fires. Mm-hmm. but they need it. The inmate crew needs to be bigger. Instead of people paying for it, half of the people in prison aren't there because they want to be. A lot of them had a lot of problems by not having parents that discipline them when they're kids. And our biggest problem in America is when they took the paddle out of grammar school.
Well, we can't fix the paddle.
No, you can't fix that.
We have a question from the public.
Okay. Rick, if I can just quickly go.
Oh, thank you very much for letting me speak. When you talk about expanding dishes and expanding irrigation, I think the North Cuba water, people without water, would very much love to benefit from this also. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, so just so we're clear, so sure. Lower Forbestown ditch and that perspective is obviously, you know, we again need to stay within the confines of what is agency owned and maintained. So, you know, we want to make that very clear and to the tune of total transparency.
Sure.
Let's not present and come to you guys and say that what's currently out there is 100% in tune and 100% meeting the expectations, right? So there's a level of, you know, catch up that needs to be played in some of these areas, you know, before we would have
sure.
the opportunity of then, you know, really turning loose and expanding from there. We, in so many ways, need to true some things up and reestablish some groundwork, you know, having the proper amount of employees and through some restructure process and having full hands on deck, I think. This will be the irrigation season that really helps us get there, along with a more aligned, you know, expectation of how to, that's been supported by you guys for the better half of 6 months now.
Maybe too, some short-term versus long-term goals.
And that's exactly right. So, you know, you kind of start back, get comfortable again,
sure.
you know, again, reestablish a baseline and then look to expand or see where future opportunity might allow for additional conveyance from there.
So does this potentially give us money for staff time as well?
There is we could do that. It could be a mixture of being able that the grant would invest in additional equipment that we could then outfit the staff to go and do. And we could do a sunken cost of dollar match if wanted. So, you know, those are all things that I think are being kicked around right now with what our ultimate submittal is going to look like. But yes, we could be submitting agency time as well.
Okay, so we get all this equipment in this grant. We have the inmate crews out there working. We have our staff out there supervising, working, making this happen. Mm-hmm. We're getting paid and reimbursed for all of that, potentially.
Record keeping obviously would need to be on par, but those are all viable options.
Nice. And this $168 million is, or $165 million is total funded.
And so, and that's not been confirmed. So the webinar made it very clear that with the state shakedown of the state budget, those types of things, the $165 million was pulled from their website, but the morning of the webinar, they were not wanting to lock in on any one specific value, at least at that point in time. None of them felt comfortable enough to do so. So they did publish it. However, that day of the webinar, they were very cautious to not throw out a number.
Which is important, right? Because it's our job to present a need that ties to a cost and let them perform that work just on that.
And potentially, we would be going after how much? How many millions? Have you got that far yet?
We've not.
Offhand?
No, I mean, really wanted to get this back in front of you guys, you know, talk scope, talk specific efforts that you saw fit, and then obviously we go back to work and really create that scope of work and what becomes the ultimate submittal to them.
Okay. With the number of potential participating agencies, this number and all this, I mean, is it viable that we could get $10 million of that $165 million?
I don't. I think that's a bit of a stretch.
I think you're in the tens to hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
But we're going to go for, you know, we have no loss of need, so let us put together scopes of work
exactly.
and present that, and let us do what we do and see what we get, what we can grab.
Do you need additional guidance on which directions to head, or are you guys good with that?
assuming you guys are good with the previous, you know, without seeing it, but obviously understanding the described map that we had already sent over to CAL FIRE and had already been working on a pretty clear-cut plan of specific areas that they would like to see us targeted, we believe that that is where our commitment needs to be, is hearing from them and already having that aligned. You know, hopefully, obviously, COVID continues to, you know, the dust settles, if you will, and that allows for, you know, back to some in-person and some of those restrictions removed that make meetings and things a little bit more interpersonal as we work through this.
Thank you for all your work on it, Jimmy.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
John.
Kristen, you're up.
Well, you're probably the only one in the room more excited than me about this project and getting to talk about this today. So it's an exciting thing to be before you today to talk about some funding that's going to go to serve a long-standing need for our community, specific to the area of Palermo. There's been historical presentations made to this board informationally about the issues that have faced the Palermo community with regard to contamination of their drinking source water. That location of the county is wholly served by on-site septic systems, and most of those older, very small-sized parcels also are served by on-site wells. And so the situation is small parcels, on-site wastewater, coupled with flooding issues, high groundwater, and poorly drained soils, and that cross-contamination has taken place. Back in 2007, Environmental Health partnered with Supervisor Connolly and the Palermo residents, and they conducted a survey with the caveat being that any of the data results wouldn't be punitively used against the homeowners. So if they identified that there was surfacing effluent and that there were concerns, that those people would not be punitively regulated. But what that survey did reveal is that there were nitrate contaminants in the source water, and they actually did find some hits of fecal coliform in surface water in the drainage system. So the County Environmental Health Department, the County Department of Water and Resource Conservation, and obviously Supervisor Connolly and the residents of Palermo have been looking for remedies to this situation. In 2010 and 2012, there were separate engineering studies conducted, and those both focused on solutions geared toward sewering the area or bringing in large-scale engineered septic systems. There are multiple different constraints on that as a solution, the number one being the cost of everything. So it was either, you know, the cost of infrastructure, the cost of connection fees, the annexation into LOPUD, the capacity fees at SCORE, all of these moving pieces and parts, that it was just a non-starter from the beginning because of the cost associated with it. Past the second engineering study, the conversations at the Water and Resource Conservation, Environmental Health staff, and then staff with this agency started discussing options for, let's look at what existing infrastructure is. Let's look at what we can do for a cost-effective way to serve this long-standing public health need. And the solution started to be, let's use funds that are available through the Integrated Regional Water Management Planning opportunities to bring drinking water to these parcels. So fast forward to today, basically this funding that has been designated for disadvantaged communities specific to what's called the Mountain County area, kind of the Sierra Ridgeline counties that are involved in this Integrated Regional Water Management Planning effort, have been giving specific priority in certain pots of funding. So this Palermo project moved very quickly to the top of the list for that. So the county was able to obtain $41,000 for the Palermo project for some technical studies, as well as some additional funding that would go to some of the other areas for wastewater technical observations. The critical difference with what this funding looks like, one of the other engineering studies that I mentioned had some grant funding for that study. We have a group of folks involved with the team now, and on the 9th of March, the board selected a consultant to carry out this technical study that has been involved in a number of different water and wastewater projects in the county. So the intent was, even though we received a couple of proposals, the selection was with somebody that has that ability to bypass the get-to-know-you phase of that process and not have to go out and spend time, you know, knocking on doors in Palermo and nice to meet you, what's your problem? We were going to fast forward past that phase. We have a kickoff meeting scheduled for the first week of April. We're going to get right to it with staff that have been long-standing involved with, like I mentioned, the water and wastewater issues in the county, but also this integrated regional water management planning effort. And these, this firm has the pulse on funding that's available for water and wastewater remedy solutions. So the hope is that, according to that schedule that is included in your board packet, that the window is very narrow. By September, we should have a package that is outlining all of the technical requirements, the availability of South Other infrastructure, any kind of connection fees, any of those things that would be involved in bringing these folks onto our system would be outlined, costs associated, and they would put together somewhat of a turnkey package that could be then all of these funding sources for clean drinking water programs. They would be able to apply to multiple different funding sources for that community. So,
awesome,
great, really good.
Any questions?
Yeah, I've got some other ideas. that is a real bad area for water. And is there a way that the agency could put up informational packets how and why they should get on the South Feather water? Because what we're seeing now with this drop, we don't know if it's going to rain next year. These wells are going to go dry, and then people are high and dry. And then the other issue is those wells are highly polluted.
Well,
I know personally, when I sold my parents' home in Gridley, just a bacteria test you have to do to sell that home is $42. But that's just a small bacteria test. That does not show you the bad toxic poisons in them. And check that out. And that is about $3,800. And none of these people out there can afford to do that. But all of them would like to be on this good mountain-treated water through a great treatment plant. But they don't know how to do it. They can't afford it. But they don't have an education program to show and tell them how to do it.
Well, I think that was a component of the 2007 study. There were community outreach meetings conducted. There was an education component to that outreach before they actually were able to explain what the need was to get community participants to come forward and participate in that survey. I don't think that there's any lack for want in that community for clean drinking water. But again, there are cost restrictions for a solution. So I think it's, you know, you have all of the regulatory folks at the table for the discussion, and then you have this agency as somewhat a possible solution to the situation at the table. Mm-hmm. And so this collaborative effort, along with an engineering team that has some experience in this area, longstanding in our county, I think this is the right team of folks together to come up with.
Is there any federal grants for this?
There are multiple different funding sources, EPA Clean Drinking Water, State Drinking Water. So there are multiple different funding sources. And again, this firm that was selected is very well versed in all the available funding sources. So the hope is that by the end date of this schedule in September, we'll have a package that can go to state or federal funding sources for hopefully to assist with this.
Really great.
Anything else?
Thank you very much. This is exciting.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Okay,
Okay, tab 6 information item is water storage feasibility, and Director Moreland will lead this discussion around reservoirs. So Director Moreland, you will start.
Okay, what we got a problem with, these droughts are really bad. I can't see it getting any better. Over the years, they're trying to do one over in science. It's stuck, but over on the west side of this valley, does us no good. And this old map here is everything in the eastern foothills. This was made in 1922 war map. These old people went up in the mountains and they really studied it. Not like we do today, but they did it by hand. And geographical surveys, but a lot of these reservoirs can be built, and they need to, and they really need to step it up. Because, man, this is devastating, and the growth of this state is grow. And what gets me, how can you build any new homes without any new water? And then you look at the Lake Oroville today, it's probably 39%. Wow. And just in some areas, there is no water. And all of this contributes to the wildfire. You can't fight fire without water. And then the Paradise Fire. In 2010, we put a group of guys that go up there and try and curb that on Stearns Road and come up with a plan to put one across Stearns Road on the West Branch.
Director Moreland, can I halt you real quick? Please let the record show that Director Starr needed to leave the board meeting at 3:25 p.m.
Okay, now back to the Stearns Road one. You would go across that canyon, and that is a direct lineup to Concow, and then to the south. That's a fire escape. That reservoir would have backed the fire up 7 miles, and no doubt in my mind, it would have saved the town with the last fire. And that's 350 to 380,000 acre feet of water. Go up to the north, past Paradise, to Sterling City. There's another one. I have the plans that these great old guys drew up, and that would hold 400,000 acre feet. And you can put hydros on it. Yeah. But the main thing is, all this stuff's burning up. And what do you need an environmental impact for on the one on Stearns Road? Everything's gone. It even burnt the snakes and the lizards. But it was $58 billion to rebuild Paradise. It probably would have cost $2 billion to build those two reservoirs. But what scares me, it burnt for years. I have an uncle that grew up in Gridley. He passed away 2 years ago at 84. He told me his first job was Jarville Gap out of high school fighting fire. So this has gone on forever. And as we go on in life, these droughts are going to get worse. And if we're going to survive this, you got to have backup water for Lake Oroville at 39%. And it may fill up with all the snow melt. We'll be lucky to see half a lake. But that water up there would be extra water to run through the system and run through the dam. But once that dam gets so low, those big 6 generators, they're going to have to shut them off. The amount of money that they can't produce by running this power is crazy. Our state's in bad shape, man. So we need to really step it up. These ones up above, this is a Honeycutt Creek on this little map. There's 3 of them. Those areas on that Honeycutt Creek are prone to flood during big events, and it helps. It floods out all them areas before you get to Highway 70, and all of this water will end up in the Honeycutt Creek going west, dumps into the Feather River. The way it is now, nobody gets the benefit. And we need to store that, use that. And then with your Highway 70 expansion going to Marysville, this town's going to grow. We've got to be ready for it. So we've got to get on these as fast as we can and get a value out of that water. Otherwise, it's going to burn up, and what do you got? And it creates great jobs building these systems, and then when they're done, You got all these great people making great money maintaining them. This is a great deal. So we got a lot of work to do, guys. And then we're going to try and get some help through the state and our elected officials. We probably need to bring them in here one at a time, educate them, and see what we can do. But the main thing is those in Paradise, those should be included ASAP right now. Because if you don't, 20, 30 years from now, it'll happen again. So we are what you call not a proactive society. We are a society that fixes it after it goes, like the Oroville Dam spillway. Why not plan ahead and fix it now and put these people to work and make this North State work for us? That's about all I can say on that today. But we'll keep working on that in the future.
So on your map here, Dennis, we have what, four of these? What that would be in our district? Five of these?
So
Sweet Flats
to me should be number one, because that is a really prone area to burn. And the way they drew this up, you can't really see the road that goes through it, but you can. What you want to do is move that one down to the west, and a topographic map, we could get a big one of them, but you can't take that road out, so you just move that reservoir down, and then there's one way below it, right at where the little sign says Honcutt Creek. There's one that they didn't pencil in. That one would work very well. And then the one below it is down in Dunstone. That's a big rock quarry. What you want to do with that one is you get the rock guys to dig on all that rock then to your benefit, and then that's water storage. But the biggie is the one here that says South Honcutt. That is huge. Compared to Collins Lake over here, it's probably five times as big. And all of those, the end result, you'll have boat ramps, you'll have resorts around them, and there ain't going to be no more pot growing in Sweet Flats area. But these areas, what scares me coming up, they're going to burn up if you don't have water. But these can be moved down a little bit. They can be played with. You just get a topographic map and figure out what works for you. And then the other ones, to me, you got three that should be top priority. But as time comes on, we need to define them. But what I'm thinking is to make this go faster, you got all these kids going to school in college. They could draw up these plans as a school project. Wouldn't cost the agency hardly anything, and then you finalize it. And it would be neat for them. Hey, man, I drew up that plan when I went to college, and now I'm an engineer building it. So there's a lot of things we can do, but what we need to do is get a bigger map, get the state officials in here, and get going on this, because we're out of water. Yeah, a couple weekends ago, me and the wife went for a ride up Highway 70 to Belden and Caribou, and looked in that North Fork. I'm almost 70. Lived here all my life. I look at that North Fork this time of year. Unbelievable. No water. Bucks Creek Powerhouse wasn't even turning. This is as bad as it can get. So, we got to get after it, man.
So, where does a process like this start?
It starts, to me, with the governor of the state of California, every elected official, all the way to the Oregon border. What I think we should do is invite them in, one at a time, explain it to them. They have a lot of staff. We don't. And get them working. These elected officials work for us, the taxpayer. I think we could really start something good here for South Feather in our community, and there is a lot more that could be done. Because when you get that Highway 70 built, people are going to start coming up here. This is a great place to live. And they all want to get out of the cities, but what are you going to do if they come up here and there's no water and all their stuff burns up?
What do you see as the next step, Dennis?
That should be the next step. Invite our elected officials, sit them down, and get them going. They got offices, they got money, they got staff, and they can work together. If we get them all working together, good things can happen. And if we don't, it's going to burn, man. It takes a while to do this, but I think you could save a lot of money with getting these colleges. View College has got a lot of good kids in Chico State. Them kids are smart, man. They got all electronic devices. In the old days, all we had was a high level, a rule, and a plumb bob. That's how they built Orville Dam. But now you've got it all. They got GPS. They got all the computers. There's all the cats sitting there. Nothing's happening.
Thank you. Any questions for Dennis?
So you're going to advocate this on the statewide basis? You're going to advocate this on the three or four reservoirs that should be built within South Feathers District?
Our deal is here. This is our forte, but the other issue is Paradise. While that place is on the rebuild, that needs to be included in it. Our governor and supervisors here, they need to be all over that. But they don't know about it until we tell them. So we need to send them letters of invite and bring them right here in this office and educate them, and then they'll go to work. They don't know we got a problem until you tell them.
So, Rafe, so advocating the viability of this from a district standpoint versus a statewide, I guess I must admit up front I have a little bit of skepticism about the statewide approach, especially us spending resources and time on that, but these three or four reservoirs in our districts?
Yeah, if I may comment, you know, I would say as South Feather, as an ambassador of surface water, right, that's what we are, you know, we do hold a responsibility to educate the needs within our community and primarily within our district, but I did say community, so it could stretch a little bit. I don't know about the entire state. And so I think that's an appropriate effort, right? I mean, if we don't lead and educate those of influence, who will, right? We probably carry the most weight because of what we do in our water rights and those types of things. Now, the back half of that, once you educate, right? We can get in front of these folks, most of them we know on a first-name basis.
Yeah.
The next step is then how do you develop roadmaps where it makes, and let's just be clear, it makes a politician look good, right, in the eyes of people. That's what politics are about. So through the process of educating, if we can develop roadmaps so that, you know, it's an opportunity for them to shine and look good, that's your higher likelihood for execution. But I would argue it needs to be district and community-based. I don't think excluding Paradise is necessarily a good idea. I think that one is probably necessary as well when you talk about our conveyance and Feather River, etc. But it has to start there, right? I think statewide will lose the momentum early on if we even gain any localized. Remember, creating water storage is no easy feat. If it was easy, it would have already been done, right? The other thing that we're competing against in this process, if I can continue to elaborate, is what the new future of water storage looks like for Lake Orville. I don't think anyone in this room truly knows what that 3.5 million acre foot reservoir, what the new norm is going to be.
Yeah.
If that new norm is 2 million, for example, we're going to compete against that, right, for these other ancillary storages. The argument would be, well, why wouldn't you continue to focus on getting that back into a comfort level as far as mass storage, which is state? So there's a lot that happens in this process. My long way of saying, you have to start local and in our district, Director.
To me, it makes more sense for you guys to have to pull all this up here than the state.
Yep.
And the same thing in Paradise. You don't want DWR control of that. It should be Paradise Irrigation with those.
Yeah, and it's all part of the strategy. And then what you hope is you gain momentum in a local district, and then others in need in other portions of the state look and say, well, me too. We want to build off of that work that was done up there by South Dakota. But it's just my two cents. Of course, I serve you, so you direct me on what you expect me to do, and we will operate to that.
It's a hard thing to do, but if you can pull off one every so many years, we're not doing nothing now. And to me, these droughts are getting worse.
Justin, have you ran across any precedents or something like this?
Nevada Irrigation District has a project that we've been working on. It's called the Centennial Dam project. It is extremely difficult to build a dam in California.
Large opposition.
That particular site is situated between two existing dams. And so you'd think it'd be an ideal location, no sound audit, no endangered species issues. And you wouldn't believe the level of opposition. Local, even statewide attention.
How much storage acre feet would that be?
It's about 110,000 acre feet.
Mm-hmm.
There's an existing water right. It's a state filing water right, 1927 vintage. The state planned for that site to be a dam, and in approaching 100 years, it hasn't been built. So, you know, it's just... You're really bucking the tide of policy and the legal dynamics by trying to build new storage. Not that it can't be done, it can, but it's extremely difficult. The state policy directives are all a focus on demand side measures, conservation, water conservation in an urban setting. As you know, we've got an ag water, urban water management plan that requires conservation measures. We've got an ag water management plan that forces conservation, and you've got mandates which seem like every single year reducing the use of water in the state. So this, again, the state policies all seem to be on the demand side, focused on demand reduction, conservation, not on supply enhancement. To the extent there is some supply enhancement, the trend seems to be groundwater banking, primarily in the San Joaquin Valley. All that being said, my personal opinion is I'd love to see more storage.
Sure. Yeah, I don't trust anything you can't see.
And if I may be so bold to build on it, what history hasn't shown is the state of wildfires in California the last several years. Right. 25% of your state burns up, maybe that slowly changes that migration and belief around storage.
Maybe.
If anything, that'll be it. That is the mechanism.
How do you even go about starting a process like that?
Feasibility.
Feasibility study?
I mean, it's the engineering standards since the time this map was drawn have changed considerably. You don't know if there's faults. You don't know, yellow-legged frog. You name it. There could, and one little issue in an already very difficult process could totally derail you. So it's a lot of feasibility, very expensive pre-project planning.
Yeah, it's hard to do. I know we started it in on that Stearns Road one in 2010. We actually invited Metropolitan Water District up here, and two guys came, and then it all fell apart. Because who is going to pay for the feasibility study a lot of money and then say no, or they sue you, they stop it. But it's really sad that this state is in dire need of a lot more water storage and nothing's happening.
Dennis, I've heard you say we several times. Are you involved with the group that's tackling that?
I used to be. But you could get on the phone. You could probably call Metropolitan Water District up today and say, hey, guys, we've got these areas we want to build. Would you fund it and buy the water or help do this?
Okay.
But this,
so you want to talk about opposition. You're inviting the largest Southern California water entity serving 25 million people
to be your partner in the project. You take them to Paradise, Metropolitan, And then the people in Paradise are going to throw a fit and say, no way. So it's hard to do.
It would be beyond
it's hard to do.
Garden Bar Reservoir, maybe 15 years ago, it's Wolf Creek, which is in the vicinity of Camp Far West. So it's a Bear River tributary. That ag district proposed exactly what you're saying, a partnership with Metropolitan Water District. You wouldn't believe the entire Northern California was waving torches and ready to string that board up.
And that's the problem you got. These people will not come together. They won't give. It's a big fight. But here, we might have a possibility as a little company to pull a few of these off. I don't know. We need to study it and take a look at it and see if you can do it. Do it. If you don't, well, don't waste your time. Let it all burn. Because our state officials, they're not going to do nothing. Because like the whole USA, we're over 50 years since they built a major reservoir. The infrastructure of this state, roads, water lines, power lines, it all needs to be rebuilt. Quite honestly, you need another state water project just like Oroville did years ago. Oroville's played out, wore out. But now they fixed a little bit of it. But there's a need for a lot more.
So what I would say again is, if you agree, our role is to educate those of influence and then see where that goes and just update you along that journey.
Okay.
Yep.
That doesn't take a tremendous amount of effort to teach.
All right, well, thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
It seems like we should pick one of these that's the most viable and go after that.
Most viable still in Florida.
I'd focus on a groundwater bank. I don't know if you could be partnered with something in Palermo. Palermo's in Wyandotte, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, if you had a fixed budget, if you had $10 to devote to this, you're right. You got to devote it to the most viable alternative. And I don't. It's hard for me to orient these, but South Ponca, South County. We have a little bit of service area based on memory, right?
Sure.
Down there. I mean, but there's not a lot of demand there. So I don't know where you generate storage, but I don't know where it's going. You don't have customers.
You
can do
it, you have to sell it. You have to get a permanent buyer.
But you don't want that to be Southern California.
No.
You want to serve an unmet demand here locally.
Which is really South County.
Yeah.
So in most years you have existing storage capacity. Mm-hmm. You have more storage today than you have customer demand. And you could double or triple your customer demand and still have a safe margin. So, you know, again, if you're focusing limited dollars on new storage, my personal opinion off the cuff is groundwater banking, Wyandotte, Palermo. We just heard the presentation about the other dynamics. A lot of grant funding, a lot of state policy focuses on multi-benefit. So to the extent you can deal with disadvantaged community, safe drinking water dynamics, unsafe and failing sewage, you know, local on-site sewage systems, groundwater banking, storage of surface water in high water years, all those multiple benefits, you know, start tying together, and you have a much more viable project. It's not like the good old days when the guys coming back from World War II just built projects. That's just what they did.
They built the whole world.
But that world is no longer what we live in. And whether we like it or not, we live in a world where you have to have multiple benefits. You have to be prepared for a long slog of pre-shovel in the ground, feasibility, project planning, environmental analysis, permitting, regulatory approvals. It's a nightmare. The green tape situation in the state is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest
that conveyance is storage. So that's how it's happening. I think you and I are speaking the same language from that standpoint. Increased conveyance by default is more storage.
I can see that aspect. I see the biggest problem though in South County is the downward flow, right? Like Palermo, there's all kinds of downward paths we already have to Palermo. The biggest problem in South County is downward flow, gravity flow to make this viable. I see one project on here, Swedes Flat, that solves a big portion of that downward flow problem, as well as tying that into fire suppression, fire prevention, everything related to fire.
Does Forbestown Ditch, could it tie into Swedes Flat, lower Forbestown Ditch?
It could, well, with some effort.
Elevation wise, feasible.
Yes, it is feasible. So it'd actually be the lower hill ditch or some portion thereof that comes off of Forbes, lower Forbestown. But yes, it could.
And all of that area has burned, and a big part of that was there was no water there to fight the fire. There was nobody keeping their place green. There was no preventative measures. It's dry as a bone out there. There's no water. So, I mean, again, I get your point on groundwater banking and all that stuff, but that would all be taking place in parts of our district that already has plenty of downward flow potential. I mean, we could light all of Palermo up with drinking water from our plant, right? I mean, that place could be made green from the drinking water plant. The issue where we, you know, have the biggest problems really is in that South County higher elevation.
Yeah. You've got that certain elevation in this side of the valley and on the west side of the valley. Santa Rosa, same thing. I think if we work on it, we might be able to get one of these for the future.
And when we talked about our policy, mine and Director Wilburn's policy that we introduced that Jamie's been running with, we talked about the different phases and, you know, 1,000 feet and below and what was viable now. And so obviously that's what we have existing water potential too. Those other parts that we talked about were literally these higher elevation South County places. And if you look at that Swedes Flat Reservoir, I mean, that's in the middle of all the burn. And the driest area in our district is really literally right around that area. So just an observation on my end. If we're going to do this, I would like it to see it have an impact on our district for the residents of our district, not just more potential to sell south. I'm not opposed to selling anymore due to our financial crisis, and you know we need revenue, so that has now become a necessity. But I would like to see, obviously I've said it numerous times before, more water to our existing district voter owners.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit more on closed session with this and keep it going and explore and see what can happen. Because once that Highway 70 is done, that'll be a few years, and these people are going to want to get out of Sacramento and the Bay Areas and get in this area and start building their little small farms. But this is a long ways down the road that it's worth looking at.
Thanks, Dennis.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next tab. Art.
Good afternoon, directors. As we talked about last month, we're updating charges in our rules and regulations, bringing them up to date, and also giving a path for update. This one is a prime example. It hasn't been updated in what I can see 10 years. The Butte County continues to raise their rates, and this, by changing the rules and regulations, we have the ability to now update the cost without having to with the current costs. So, as you know, the encroachment permit is required anytime that we have to do work out in the county right of way. Sorry. And so we do have to do these from time to time.
So what's our cost? Yeah, I mean, are we, is it a burden to the agency to do these? Are we just trying to generate additional income, or are we just trying to pay for what we're doing?
We're trying to pay for what we're doing. The current costs of the encroachment permit, I believe, is at $350 currently. And as you can see in the rules and regulations description, there's a site inspection. So we have to send, you know, our personnel out there to do the site inspection. We have to fill out the paperwork, you know, file it. So we're trying to recoup our costs for actually doing that type of work. So there wouldn't be any, we wouldn't be making money on it.
Just be breaking even, essentially.
Yes.
I hope the public can see the reasonableness of what our agency is proposing here. The fact that we are just trying to cover costs. We have about a 30% increase on this one permit that we haven't changed for 10 years. For example, I just got another ag power permit from the County of Butte, and it was double what I paid just 2 years ago. And that one 2 years ago was probably, well, it was double the one I paid for 3 or 4 years before that. So very, very reasonable on our part. Not your typical government fee increase that is rampant as we speak. And that permit I'm talking about for myself, everything is the same. It's the same single inspection. It's the same everything. Of course, they got the new electronic permit system, but in theory, that should make it more efficient for the county of Butte and control their costs. So once again, I commend our agency for keeping these increases reasonable.
Any questions about this one? I move adoption of the proposed changes to the rules and regulations regarding the encroachment permit fee.
Second.
Got a second. Any, not sitting in computer, but any public participation?
No questions or comments here?
What time?
3:54.
Thank you.
And nothing in the email inbox as of 3:53.
Okay. And Art, real quick, how many times in the last year did we issue this permit? Roughly.
I wasn't involved, I would say, right, about a dozen?
Yeah, I'm trying to do the math right now. There was a sharp increase as a result of all the conditions that have changed. I would say 10 to 12.
Okay.
Can we continue at that pace for a while?
Sure. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Four ayes, one absent. Thank you, Eric.
All right, tab 8 is a LAFCO election ballot for your consideration. So a reminder, LAFCO, when they are seeking nominations for a regular enterprise and non-enterprise member, they need 21 of the special districts to be able to participate in nominations in order to make it official. So as history has presented itself, we try to be responsible and get ahead of those and do our part as well. So for this particular one, you'll see on page 2, the publication from March 12th talking about the regular non-enterprise and the alternate enterprise non-enterprise members up for nomination. And then there was actually, on the last page, we did receive, specific to the district, a letter dated March 10th from Durham Recreation and Park District endorsing
Bradley,
thank you. And then since receipt of that, you'll notice on the actual election ballot there was a red line, and Mr. Bradley withdrew his nomination for regular member, but is still listed and eligible as a alternate enterprise or non-enterprise member. So that's why I left the endorsement from Durham Rec and Park in there for consideration. So I personally do not know either of the two nominations for regular non-enterprise, nor do I know the two for alternate. So I'm in front of you, seeking if you guys would like to nominate and place and present the LAFCO nominations for those two categories.
So did these two members, did they receive notice from us that we were going to be voting on this today? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, why are they not here selling themselves?
So the only notice they would have received is they know when they go through the process to seek a position with LAFCO that it does go out to all special districts and memberships, and then certainly they could look at each publicized board agenda for each of those districts and then choose to participate and present themselves or not.
So Todd, my answer would be this: a LAFCO commissioner seat is like true community service. But there are not people
buying for
these seats. Typically, there was a little bit of an excitement. You may recall, maybe it was last year or so, with the proposed Tuscan Water District and going through LAFCO. That seems to have simmered down. So this is back to kind of normal community service type.
I mean, I don't even have a candidate statement here to go after. I mean,
yeah, I'm a little help because I don't know.
Please,
Director Edwards.
Larry Bradley is on last night when I was on the
Cemetery District.
And he got voted in for us.
So he was nominated by the Cemetery District last night?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and in all fairness, he did receive at least a recommendation letter that must have gone out to all nominating and voting districts. I don't know any of them, so I can't communicate any of them.
That seems to be the sentiment, is nobody knows any of them.
I know Al McGran. I do not know Dave Doman. Al McGran is a long time, probably 20 to 30 years board member on that Parks and Rec district. Good quality guy. He's been on LAFCO on a number of prior terms. I think he's pretty knowledgeable. As between Larry and Bruce, I know Larry was, I do not know either of them. I do know Larry was recommended by the Farm Bureau. And in the past, he was the candidate related to the proposed Tuscan Water District. I don't know Bruce Riston, but I assume he's more of a local to this area.
He was a police officer.
Oh.
City
of Oroville?
City of Oroville?
Yeah.
District Attorney's Office, Kristen.
So the Butte Local Agency Formation Commission is sending us all of this information.
Yeah.
They're just not sending us candidate statements or candidate information.
You have in front of you everything I received. Holding back nothing.
So again, for us to make an informed decision, it feels like maybe did the South Butler staff do some research for next time this happens? Did they do some research? Did we reach before we put it in our packet? Did we reach out to the candidates and ask for a statement? I mean, this just seems like one of the most random things that we've come across in our board packets. This is one. Everything else, I feel like I'm somewhat informed on, and I'm making an informed, decision. And this one, I just feel like I'm just throwing this pile.
Because it's truly name recognition, isn't it?
Sure.
Right. So you either recognize the name or you don't. So.
It looks like our vote's due by May 14th. I mean, can we gain some additional information on the next meeting?
Well, let me tell you what happens, at least historically, is it takes several months before LAFCO gets their 21 nominations in to actually make it official. So I don't like being pinged every week to do our part in the way to the board meeting, but that's not a problem.
Sure.
I can certainly go back if your direction is we want candidate statements. I don't know if we'll even provide them, but...
Maybe more so, as I want some information that could lead me to the conclusion of who's going to do the best job for South Feather. Who's going to promote South Feather's interests? That's who I want to vote for. Does anybody know that answer at this point?
It's hard to imagine an issue where one guy would be better than the other guy. I mean, your issues are going to be annexations, which are fairly routine. I mean, unless we've got a fairly controversial project, such as you're constructing Sweet's Flat and annexing all of the South County, then you maybe get into the commissioner's background and reading the tea leaves of who you think may support it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't see that happening in the next term of LAFCO commissioner.
Okay, and I appreciate and understand Ray's desire to get this off of his plate. I mean, something that I guess potentially appears to be arbitrary as far as who we choose. I would hate to see you getting, you know, bothered by it every week. So,
well, here's the risk you run. We place an annexation for the district at the board, and we select someone here, and they say, no, we don't want annexations into the district. So you could run a risk if you don't select someone that has South Feather's best interest, right?
Yeah.
Let's write in Director Dickman's name.
Ooh.
Right. I was thinking Director Wilbur, myself. So
have enough on my plate right now.
And listen, all I'm trying to do is be a good steward and do our part for the agency.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, you've just made a...
Hey, Doug, you want to write in your name? I can second that motion.
I mean, I think they've gone so far with where they're at. I mean, I think let's not waste names here. Let's find who's already in this game and it's going to do the best for our district.
Did you say, Ray, it's not due until May?
It says, but I think it's the day before it's due. Term expires. Where did I read the actual?
It says May 14th, due on board.
Yeah, see, so it was prior to our next board meeting. Or not.
Just after.
Sorry. It's prior to the May board meeting. So we've got one more
board meeting. More board meeting.
Yeah.
We can do what we can to get background on the various candidates if the board likes. Or, you know, at least if we can't do that, I mean, perhaps we can have discussions with them.
Yeah.
Make a recommendation.
I would like the general manager to investigate who will be the best for our interest in South Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And Director Rickman, I'm on their website. There's no information for the candidates either.
Yeah, so that's going to be a little challenging. But, I mean, again, otherwise we're just making an arbitrary vote here, right? I mean,
well, then you're going to have to trust in my feedback back to you that it's accurate.
Well, we're in this deep with you as general manager. Isn't that the relationship at this point?
I already know my answer. I'm just going to write in your name and get through the votes. Okay, so we're going to table that.
Yeah.
Okay, can we move on?
We can, that's it.
Tab 9. So tab 9 is business item regards to the clerical support, water treatment distribution, and hydro generation employee unit MOUs. Over the last several months, we have been discussing those MOUs and the bargaining unit work in closed session. I just provided directions, put that direction into print. And now it's in front of you for formal adoption. So I highlighted again here, and you can thumb through, and I need to comment on a couple edits in terms of the content here. But under clerical support, you can see they're requesting a 3-year term, which we've discussed in the past, 3% general wage increase. Water treatment distribution was a 2-year term. You see the general wage increases for 2021 and 2022. Articles and exhibits that we made modifications to, which I'll highlight in a moment, and then Hydro Group, same type of thing, 2-year term, and those changes. So if I may first comment, the clerical support MOU, as you see it, its full content in your board packet, requires no edits from what we discussed. The water treatment and distribution unit, when I transferred the content into the board packet, Article 2.7, which was an ad on Union News, which we've been discussing, I somehow inadvertently left off subsections A, B, and C, so it started with a portion of like B in 2.7. So I have since, bear with me, let me get to the right MOU. So subsection 2.2 is page 7. You'll see 2.7, when I transferred over the content, I lost A, B, C, and D. It is the exact same language that is in print in the Hydro one on the next section here. So all the language is exactly what it should be in the Hydro. I've since updated that, but I missed the printing of the article. And then on the Hydro Generation Group, two things there. Article 19.1, which is the physical fitness regimen, I had left out the maximum $60 per month. It was blank. I didn't populate it. That had changed from $40 to $60 per month. I didn't populate the number. And then on the MOU signature page, I did not update the shop steward's title. So it had
it says and reads in this MOU communications tech, but since the time we've actually interfaced the bargaining unit, which was a number of years back, as you guys know, his title has changed to hydro maintenance foreman, so that was corrected.
Okay, so you need a motion basically approving this as per the changes you just articulated?
Yeah, that's correct. And then I need formal board approval based on your direction over the last couple months on these topics that we've gone over in detail.
Any questions about these guys?
I apologize for a few of those edit issues.
It's a lot of paper.
Yeah, but I felt it was here and there. I felt it was important to not just publicize the change, but the entire body of the MOU. You know, so those are public records, so it's every page.
You want to fix that and put it in the next month just so that it's out there publicly?
Yeah, I can.
They're public documents.
Yeah, they'll be posted to the website. Okay. So they're all public documents. And I've already made the edits. I just didn't make the binding.
Right.
I missed the binding time.
Okay.
So as far as a member of the public investigating this and looking at this, they're going to get the full text on what they find. The only thing that's a quote-unquote mistake at this point is what's in our board packet.
That's correct.
The only place it exists incomplete.
Correct. And once you adopt, those become public records with that final format. They're ready to go. They're ready to post and be public.
I got to commend Clerical again on the simplicity of what they asked for. It was very refreshing. So.
Okay. I move approval of the 2021 South Feather Water Power Agency Clerical and Support Employees Unit, Water Treatment and Distribution Unit, and Hydro Generation Employees Unit with the modifications as outlined by Ray previously for essentially a few typos. Memorandum of Understandings as listed on the following documents.
I'll second the motion.
Got a first and second. Any discussion in the public? One moment.
Nothing in the email as of 409.
Someone is asking a question. 1 second, please.
I've got a board note email that just came in as I was giving you an update. This comes in from Dan Shipman to the public relations email address. Want to bring to board's attention that the MPEA MOU is still not being edited. In quotes from December 31st, 2019, expiration and is not part of this discussion. Sincerely, Dan Shipman, Hydro Project Engineer, South of the Water and Power.
That was a bold statement, Mr. Shipman.
So can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, please.
Yes. Board note. Want to bring to board's attention that the MPEA MOU is still being edited, in quotes, from December 31st, 2019, expiration, and is not part of this discussion.
And is it listed on the cover page?
So can he give us some more clarification on exactly what he's trying to say there?
So if you recall, we spent a fair amount of effort with the management professional group on a change to the evaluation process as well as changes to their MOU. That group had approved and signed minus two signatures. John Shipman, Dan Shipman did not sign the MOU. The edits are relatively minor in nature. Things like removing certain job descriptions, things like that are in there. And so it is right now it had all signatures of that group minus those two signatures. So that's what he's referring to. I can certainly place that
into the board packet for your review as well.
And so what's the significance of adding those two signatures? Is that by majority
approval? It was majority approval. That's why we took the evaluation process, et cetera, to the board.
So what's the significance of the statement he's made?
Accuracy, I would imagine, but I'm speaking for him.
But that's not on this. Am I missing something?
It's not on this agenda item at all, so it's irrelevant to this business path. So.
Okay, so that's outside of everything we're talking
it's
about.
It's not, I mean, it's. He certainly has the right to highlight that to you, but it does not apply to this business tab. There's nothing in this business tab that refers to the management professional employees.
So that would be more of a...
Go on Zoom and give us some clarification.
So would that be more of a public comment period kind of comment? Yeah. Why is it coming up right now?
I'm just so it came into the public relations. President Wilburn asked if any public comment had come in because it came in via public relations. That seemed like the most appropriate platform to read and go off of.
And the same comment came in through here. That's what I was trying to clarify from him. That's why I was asking you to hold.
But he's not incorrect. There are two missing signatures on that memorandum of understanding with post-it notes.
But that's already been approved by the majority.
Well, the majority of the group signed off on the MOU. It's been signed, but it's missing two signatures.
So to move forward, does it need those two signatures?
No.
No. Okay, so the end result of that comment is?
It doesn't relate to this item.
Okay.
And it's comment noted.
Any other comments?
No. Nothing in the public relations email, no. As of 4/13.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. We have 4 ayes and 1 absent.
Let's see. Okay, so we're on to recess and then closed session, I believe. Thank you, Reverend.
Thank you. All right, director's report. Todd, you want to start us on?
I have nothing for today. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim, did you have anything you want to say? Okay.
Thank all these hardworking people for going through this really bad times. They've been really, really great that nobody has got really infected. That's hard to do. Thank you.
All right, and then my only comment would be I'm excited about the informational item in regards to the Flermo, so excited to see how that plays out, and it's been kind of a long time coming, but looks like there's some significant light at the end of the tunnel, so thank you for all the work on that. All right, so any comments about closed session items before we go into closed session from the public? No comments from here?
Nothing as of 4/14.
Okay. Let's take a 2-minute recess and we'll adjourn from there and come back to closed session.
Okay.
Let's go back into open session. In closed session, direction was given to legal counsel and real property negotiators. Any additional comments, questions, concerns out there?
Nothing that we received as of 5:42.
Okay. All right, we good?
We're good.
Great. All right. Meeting adjourned.
Meeting adjourned.